Hi.
And welcome back
to Behind the Crime.
I'm Ella Calora.
And I'm Rebecca Wood.
And we're your hosts.
Except not for this episode.
So true.
Hi. I'm the host today. I'm Abby. You guys know who I am.
So true.
We say our last names in every episode. You say your last name
I'm
in every
Abby
episode.
I'm Abby Lantini or Abigail Lantini. I don't care.
Seems like you do care.
So we're doing it a little different today. Abby's going to tell us about a case, and me and Becky are going to sit back, maybe
relax.
Get a little tan.
I have some chips to snack on.
I got my coffee.
I don't think you guys will have time to do anything, like, fun or sweet or happy, because this case is not happy at all.
No one said fun or sweet or happy.
Ella said, I'm going to go get a tan.
I didn't say I'm going to go get a tan.
You've never done that in your life.
We're in a freezing room.
Yeah, it's actually so cold in here, so if we're sniffling, it's not our fault.
Yeah.
I have my winter coat on. Well, it's not a winter coat, but it's my winter coat.
I have a winter coat over my lap, like a little blanket.
I'm wearing a turtleneck. It's great.
It's great.
It's giving.
It's giving.
Turtle.
Oh. Neck?
Turtle?
Okay, well, I'm eating my sun chips. You go ahead.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
This is so weird because I'm not used to doing this. So today we're going to be talking about the Nutty Putty Cave incident. This story, if you are claustrophobic, warning, this takes place in Utah, and then I'm going to get a little bit more into it. And then some terms, if you don't know what spelunking is, you guys know what spelunking is?
Mm-hmm. Vaguely.
The exploration of caves, especially as a hobby. So just like cavers, spelunkers, same thing. Yes. Okay. So, the cave was discovered in 1960. It's located in western Utah, just outside of Salt Lake City, and it's on Blowhole Hill in Utah County.
Utah is such an odd place, just to have to put that out there.
Yeah, but, like, in general, I think that the, like, landscape is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Utah's interesting, but, like, land-wise...
You know who lives in Utah?
Who lives in Utah?
Post Malone?
It was one of the most popular destinations for cavers, amateur and professional, and in the late 1980s, it became notorious for being poorly mapped and having lots of people get temporarily trapped or stuck. It became popular with scout troops and spelunkers, and I gave Ella and Becky a map, and if you want to look up a Nutty Putty Cave map, it is available in a Google search.
We'll post on the story eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe. We've been bad about that, so we can't
we
guarantee.
We have been really
okay,
bad
no guarantees.
About it.
You enter through a 6-foot-wide opening, and then you must climb down a 15-foot drop that opens into a chamber with branches to the right and left that make up nearly 1,400 feet of tunnels at a depth of 145 feet below the Earth's surface. And none of it is like, I mean, caving is not like, it's all narrow and small.
How wide is the space?
Well, that space was like, that entrance was like, that was like 6 feet wide. I don't have dimensions.
Oh, I thought the entrance was up here.
No, this is the main entrance.
Okay, I couldn't read it.
I could get to the main entrance and then I'm out.
I wouldn't even want to.
No, I wouldn't want to.
I would look at it and walk away. Also, if you look up a picture... This is just random. If you look up a picture, no. It just looks like something that's like a hole in the ground. Like, not like, you know, when you think of a cave, you think of like a...
We're both looking it up.
Like a big entrance.
Yeah.
Like arch. No, it's just like a hole in the ground. Like, basically. Because there's a thing called...
Oh, yeah, it is.
There's, you go through the big slide, which is like the entrance. And then, like, you could honestly miss it if you walked by it. Yeah, that 15-foot drop... That opens with a chamber. That's like the big slide. Yeah, like you look at the pictures and it makes me want to like.
Yeah, I'm actually like getting anxious.
But don't look up anymore so that I can get into this and give you actual dimensions. And then the picture I have here is like related to the dimensions.
We're ready.
Okay. So now let's get into the incident. Oh, no, I need to talk about John Edward Jones. Let's talk about the unfortunate victim of Nutty Putty Cave. His name is John Edward Jones. He was 26 years old from Stansberry Park, Utah. He spelunked as a kid. His whole family was kind of into that. And his dad actually got stuck one time in Nutty Putty Cave, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I didn't fact check that. But he got stuck one time in a cave, which I feel like is important to reference for later.
Well, he definitely knew the danger then.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So John Edward Jones was born into a big family of 5 boys and 2 girls. He also had 16 nieces and nephews. He was a devout Mormon, and according to his family statement later, he was known for his, quote, good nature, delightful sense of humor, strong work ethic, a genuine love of people, a masterful ability to relate to his 2 children, mm-hmm. a love and unwavering faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ, and his commitment to his family and as an amazing husband, father, son, and brother. He moved to Virginia for med school, so he hadn't been back in Utah for a little bit, and he had a wife, a daughter, and a kid on the way. Hmm. Okay, so now we can get into the incident. During Thanksgiving break, John and his family returned home for the holiday, and it was John, his brother Josh, and 9 other friends and acquaintances that decided to go to Nutty Putty Cave around 8 p.m. On the 24th.
8 p.m.?
Yeah, the 24th of November.
Okay, can I just say something? If you're going to go, what is it called, spelunking?
Yes.
Go in, like, when there's light out, why would you go at night? That's so
I mean,
much...
I guess it's dark in the cave either way.
True.
Once you're there.
I didn't understand that either. I agree. Why would you go so late?
But, like, to get out, how would you know if you're actually, like, heading
That's true.
Out? Because you can't see any light.
Yeah, true. I guess you could see, like, light that's different from a cave, though.
That's true.
Like stars. In Utah, there is light at night because it's less air pollution than here.
Way more dangerous at night, though.
Yeah, I never got that, but I don't know if that's like a thing that cavers and spelunkers do. They go at like a certain time.
Or maybe.
Never been.
The 24th of November is usually around Thanksgiving, so maybe they just were busy during the day.
Probably, yeah.
Like family stuff.
And they wanted to kind of get back into like old things that they used to do because like no one's doing this in Virginia. At least to my knowledge.
I'm not in Virginia. But.
Right. So, like, 11 people, which is pretty big for this cave specifically and for spelunking in general. So they got to the entrance around 8 p.m., and for an hour or so, it went smoothly. They entered in the largest part of the cave and explored it, known as the Big Slide, which isn't really that big to begin with, but I don't remember the dimensions exactly. Mm-hmm. So John and Josh, John's brother, and 2 of their friends decided that they wanted to explore a more challenging area of the cave named the Birth Canal, which is kind of a little bit ways after the Big Slide drop. They did not have a guide nor a proper map, just a vague idea. And they went in the general direction, and they only had like a headlamp that was like very dim. And I think it was his father's old headlamp, so it wasn't like anything efficient. And John went first. That's important. So, after wiggling through tough passages, they thought they had made it in the right direction, because there's a little bit of a split. So, waist-high hole, head first. That's how he was going in. So, he inched his way into the crevice with his stomach, hands, and hips, and it was waist-high hole, head first. And the natural process of erosion in this hole created a corkscrew-like rock, and very few have navigated this. And I want you guys to know that John Jones was 6 feet tall and 200 pounds.
No.
No man that size should be wiggling through areas like this.
I wouldn't do that.
I was going to say, I wouldn't. I'm 5'2".
Yeah. And when he realized that the passage was too small and tight for his frame, he looked for and couldn't find a large enough space to turn around. So he kept forward in hopes that there would be a larger opening. Since he assumed he was in the birth canal.
I don't know how you don't, like, freak out so bad and just give up right there. Because if that were me, I'm done.
Could he have gone backwards and gone out?
No.
So he had
because
to go forward.
He had to go forward because he was too, like, yeah. So this happened.
I would lose it.
So 50 feet earlier, they had actually turned a different way than from the birth canal and ended up in a poorly mapped / unmapped area-ish called Ed's Push, which was only 18 inches wide and 10 inches high. So they had turned the wrong route. Well, John did.
So this is the birth canal. They ended up over here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they turned down because the birth canal, like, there's an area that gets a little bit bigger.
Yeah, you can see
they
that.
John went down Ed's Push, like I said, which is only 18 inches wide and 10 inches high.
Well, that's why it's
and
not mapped.
It doesn't go any farther. Like,
it just stops.
It stops. So it was difficult to determine what actually happened, but rescuers said that John sucked in his chest to investigate the fissure, like that little small tunnel. Mm-hmm. So he slid his torso over a lip of rock and down into a 10-inch side of the crevice. So he went from 18 to 10 inches. But when his chest expanded again, he was wedged.
Yeah.
So he got himself stuck. Like, stuck. Yeah.
Oh, no.
So now...
I just need everyone to know, like, the face that I was making. I was like...
Yeah, this is actually making me feel so very uncomfortable and anxious because I'm, like, claustrophobic. So.
I'm telling you, it gets worse.
I've heard of this case, but mm-hmm. I told you that I didn't know details, and same. I'm glad I didn't because I'm like...
Only gets worse from here, uncomfy. Folks. Now I can show you guys the position
like,
that he's stuck
even,
himself
I'm
in.
I'm not even claustrophobic, and I'm like...
I'm not... There's no way.
He got stuck in that, like that. That's and like, that's the what end. They could determine.
And there's just nothing past that. Like,
no.
And he couldn't go back. Oh.
Because he's too tall. And so that's like a general, like.
Were his arms down here by his
so
side?
So I'll. Yeah, sorry. I'm getting. No, you're I'm good. Like for you. I know, because you just like want to keep. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm telling you guys, like, this is not for the weak. Now he was in an upside down position with all of his weight pushing downward. And the more he struggled to free himself, the more he slid into the narrow crevice.
And the blood is rushing to his head, so, like, he's slowly, yep. like, not...
So he ended up trapped in a part of the fissure that was 8.5 inches wide.
How did...
Like,
well, no.
Like, just, if you... The more you think about it, that's... like, the more it makes you want to throw up.
We should have brought a ruler.
Like, the worst possible case you can think of is how he was stuck.
I just...
It gets worse, guys. Like, I'm telling you... It gets worse. So as he was sliding deeper, one of his arms was pinned under his body and the other arm was forced backwards, caught on an outcropping rock. So without the use of his arms or hands, he was stuck.
No, like that just has to be the most terrifying thing to, that has to be like the worst way to die.
Like you know you can't. And where were the other two that went down with him?
So they were a little bit behind. So as Josh slowly crawled into the cave to reach his brother, the increasingly tight space made him anxious, and when he reached John, all he could see was his feet sticking out from rock that was swallowing him.
Oh, my God.
I know.
And they couldn't, like, try to pull him out.
Well, we're getting there. Okay. Like,
oh, God. What year was this?
2009.
Okay.
Did I mention that? Sorry. I think I don't know if I did.
If Abby did not mention this, which we're not sure, this happened in 2009.
Yeah. So he tried to help John out, and he managed to grab his calves and wiggle him out some, but unfortunately, with gravity and the lack of available limbs to hold him in place, he slid back down where he ended up originally.
It's also like, it's not like he was weighed 110 pounds, you know what I mean? And I'm not calling him, like, fat or anything. Like he
No,
was
with
six,
proportions, but, like,
yeah,
he's a big guy.
He's a big guy, yeah. Like, and who, do you know, was his brother? His brother was probably around the same size just because genetics, but.
Mm-hmm. They didn't say anything about it.
But who knows? That doesn't make you, like, super strong. That doesn't make you able to lift 200 pounds.
And also the situation he ended up in and the position.
Yeah.
Like, you would, if they wanted to get him out, they would have had to cut rock.
And it's also not like. He was at a, his brother, Josh, was at a good angle.
No, they were all in this tiny space. Yeah. And, like, it's not even like John could help his brother, like, it's not like John could do any of the pushing. Like, Josh, yeah. his brother, would have had to, like, deadlift.
Oh, mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. And, like, you have to, like, maneuver him because John maneuvered himself in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then ended up with his hands stuck. So he could not do anything. Yeah. So Josh came back after calling for help, and he stayed with his brother. Like, I skipped a section. My bad. I skipped a part. It's okay. So, blah, backtrack. So Josh crawled out of the fissure in panic to call for help while one of their friends stayed with John. And then Josh came back after calling for help, and he stayed with his brother, kind of singing Mormon tunes and praying and overall just, like, keeping his spirits up.
Yeah.
And after an hour, they heard sounds of rescuers. So now we're going to get into the rescue.
But at this point, he's been upside down for over an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah. So a 3-person team of rescuers arrived on the scene a little before midnight. So it had been hours at this point. It took 30 or so minutes to get to the fissure where John was stuck. And then this is where we meet Susie Motola. She volunteered to venture down into the crevice where John was, since she was the smallest of them. She was like a little over 5 feet tall and just like very thin. And after 20 minutes of slow progress, Susie's headlamp finally found the back of John and noted that he was very trapped. Mm-hmm. And to quote, Susie said, "I'm Susie, I'm here to help you." And then John said, quote, "Hi, Susie, thanks for coming, but I really, really want to get out."
So true.
And then Susie said, "No worries, John, you're going to be out of here lickety-split."
Oh, no.
So Susie tied a rope around John's ankles and slowly worked her way back out to deliver the other end of the rope to the others at the end of the cave. Mind you, they're in there, like, in deep. So this process is taking a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, time is really against them here.
And also, even for Susie, she was tiny, but it was still a small space for her, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the friction from the rocks only created more tension and efforts efforts were much harder because the friction from the rocks only created more tension. Mm-hmm. They tried to move him so he could be more comfortable, but he was too heavy. Susie also cut the legs off of his jeans to allow more space, but it really didn't do a lot to improve his comfort. She also trickled water from her water bottle down his arm so that some of it could get into his mouth. And she could hear that his lungs were filled with fluid and that his breathing was more labored. And mind you, he'd only been there for 4-ish hours or so, not even. So at this point, like, if he's already in this state, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So while she stayed with him, other rescuers arrived and tried to get John out of there. There's a trauma doctor named Doug Murdoch, and he was on the scene, and he said, quote, "Being upside down, your body has to pump the blood out of the brain. Your body isn't set up to do that, and then your entire system starts to fail." Mm. So he said at this point, John had 8 to 10 hours left.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which is, like, a long time to be stuck like that, just slowly dying.
Dying, mm-hmm.
And knowing it, too.
Yeah. So then... they tried to use a rope pulley system, so they anchored the pulleys with bolts, and then they drilled the bolts deep into the cave walls. But each piece of equipment had to be sent down the cave one by one, and it took an hour to get stuff down there.
Oh, no.
And some bigger equipment, like some drills, could not be sent down because they were too big. So it's already an hour you just took away from the 8 to 10 hours he had left.
Yeah.
So
not to blame anyone who was trying to rescue them, like they were trying everything.
Oh, no. These people are heroes.
As fast
like,
as they could.
They did everything they could. Yeah. So by 4 p.m. the next day, we were jumping. They had managed to pull John back nearly a dozen feet near the entrance. So this is almost 24 hours at this point he'd been down there.
Yeah.
So each pull of the rope caused his legs to knock into the wall of the cave, and he would have an excruciating wave of pain go through his whole body because he's in such a tight position. And he reached a point in the tunnel where the angles were too complicated and they wouldn't be able to get him through the area without breaking his legs.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And the physical trauma of that would make him go into shock and die due to the state of the point.
Because it's not only they're going to pull you and they'd have to break your legs and then it's over. They have to keep going.
And they can't numb him down there.
Yeah.
No.
So it's like they break your legs and then they have to keep pulling you and hurting you and like. No.
And his body, like, at that point, with all the fluid, like, it would have just killed him.
Yeah.
Then the anchors holding the rope on the pulley system had started to give way a little, which is not good. Mm-hmm. So hours at this point, Susie Motola climbed out of the cave and was replaced by Ryan Schertz. So he was an expert spelunker and familiar with the caves in western Utah, and he understood the situation that John was in. So Ryan Schertz said that he had to fight back tears upon seeing John, knowing how little of a chance that he had left.
Oh.
John said, "Help me get out. I don't want to be on my head." And he goes, "Why did you guys put me here?" He said that because... the newer position had him more on his head, like where he was with the progress. And while he stayed with John, the rescue team above the ground was trying to fix the pulley system and had started putting equipment back down, which is going to take another like long period of time because they had to fix some things. So then While this was happening, Ryan funneled water through a long straw for him. He reassured him with words and human touch, and they bonded about Mormonism to keep his spirits up and distract him.
At least, I'm just glad that they did, like, a very good job, I feel like, of giving him some sort of comfort.
That's why Ryan said that he wanted, like, he, like, would, like, touch his leg so he could have, like, human touch. Like, some kind of comfort that wasn't just talking to him.
Well, I'm also glad that, like, there were people willing to stay in there with him.
Hours.
And, like, take turns, like, in there with him.
Susie was in there for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so was Ryan and some other rescuers. And also sometimes John, because in and out of this, he would go through, like, panic and calm. And John would become panicked, and he would start screaming and thrashing his legs.
Yeah.
Because he was so overwhelmed. Like, I can't imagine being in that situation. Like, every time I think about it, I just, like, want to cry. I'm like, how? How? Ugh. Okay. By late afternoon, the new pulley system had been installed, and then they decided that the best way to get him out would be by pulling hard on the rope. Because at this point, they had to tug.
Yeah.
Because little by little, like, they were losing time, and their old method was not working the way they wanted
it to. Well, just at that point, it was, like, I'm sure it was, like, anything they could do, they were trying, and they were trying hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, it's, like, do or die.
Mm-hmm. So, but they knew that this would cause a lot of serious physical trauma, like, trying to wrench him out of there.
Yeah.
But they had lots of medical professionals on the scene to help him out after he got out of the cave to assist.
And it's also, like, either a lot of physical trauma or he's dead. You know what I mean? So it's the lesser of two evils, you know?
Right, yeah. So there were eight people that were pulling at the entrance, and then Ryan tried to guide John's body while John did his best to push with his hands. After about 20 minutes or so of this, Schertz yelled for the team to stop, to lower John a little to give him a break, and John said his legs were killing him. And then suddenly Ryan felt an explosion of pain and screamed, and then he blacked out.
Ryan did.
Oh no.
So under the strain of trying to pull John out, an anchor had come loose from the cave wall, sending a metal piece rocketing into Ryan Schertz's face, and immediately broke his jaw and nearly severing his tongue.
Oh my God. That gave me chills.
I know. And then when the rope snapped, John was sent tumbling back into the fissure again, where he landed on his head.
Oh. No.
Seemingly deeper than before.
Oh.
It's just like everything going against them.
Mm-hmm. Like it's cursed. Yeah. Susie later said it felt like a slap in the face.
Yeah, because that just undid all their process and pushed him further in.
Mind you, that whole process took over 24 hours.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So after that, Ryan did his best to explain that he had to leave the cave to get medical attention because his jaw was broken and his tongue was, like, almost...
Oh.
So he had to get replaced by another rescuer, which was actually his dad. Ryan's dad, not John's dad.
Oh, okay, Dave. Oh my God.
Dave, yep. Dave Schertz.
Look at your list.
Sorry, I should have worded that better. Dave Schertz, who was Ryan's dad. He was a professional as well. John at this point had very shallow breathing, and John told Dave, "I am going to die in here." Dave tried to reassure him that they were going to get him out, but at this point there wasn't much else that they could do. They tried to fix the pulley system, but like I said, the equipment was too large to fit in the areas that it needed to go, and Dave couldn't fit in to get John to tie another rope around his legs. After a few hours, Dave Schertz was exhausted, and he radioed to let him know that he needed someone to replace him. Like, he radioed up. When Dave got back up, he said, "He's dying right now. He has a heartbeat but has difficulty breathing even before I got down there. You can't get someone down there before he dies."
That has to feel so awful, like, knowing
that realization, that all of them, I'm sure that they just, like, if I was there, I think my heart would just sink. Like, there's just no way. And then Brandon Koalas, he volunteered to go down to see John. He brought a telecom radio so that he could speak to his wife, Emily.
Oh no.
But by the time Koalas reached the fissure, John was unconscious and he never woke up again. Yeah. I know.
That.
I even got chills saying that. It breaks my heart. Like,
yeah.
No. Do you know if he was able to talk to his wife at all before? Like when he was in there?
I think he was, but I didn't write it down.
Okay.
I didn't put it in my notes.
I mean, I would think that someone would have thought mm-hmm. of that and been they had like, to have. Let's have you talk to your wife.
Yeah. I read quite a few articles, and I think it did mention it, but I was like, you guys know how it was. I was like,
it's okay.
No, so I, busy trying I to get understand. This. Yeah.
And like, that's the thing about cases like this. I mean, really all cases, you just can't include every detail or we'd be here for 3 hours. Like,
mm-hmm. And this one's just like, every detail in this case like makes me want to cry. Yeah. Like I just want to cry. But by the time Qualls reached the fissure, John was unconscious and he never woke up again. And then a paramedic crawled down and pronounced him dead at 11:56 p.m. on November 25th, 2009. And there was a total of 137 rescuers, and they worked hard for 27 hours to save John. Mm. Yeah. And then for the aftermath, before leaving the site, the Utah County Lieutenant Tom Hodgson, that's what I meant to say, promised John's family that he would retrieve his body the next day. And he could not keep that promise. To quote, to make that phone call on Thanksgiving morning to a family that is hopeful you'll be bringing their son out and they'll get some closure. It wasn't an easy phone call to make. The next day, authorities determined that it was too difficult to retrieve John's body from Nutty Putty Cave. And a week after, public authorities decided to close Nutty Putty Cave in a unanimous vote to the public permanently. Well, that's
good. I'm glad at least out of everything to come out of this, I'm glad at least that came out mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah.
And it has been sealed ever since. They had concrete plugs that were put in the two entrances of Nutty Putty Cave, like that big entrance and then some other entrance. But the concrete plugs, like, didn't affect the environment, so they weren't harmful, which was good because you can't, like, artificially put something in, like, a cave like that. But, yeah. And then John's family had a plaque put on the entrance of the cave in his memory. And they said, we feel like it would be John's will to protect the safety of future cavers.
Yeah.
And they actually started to appreciate that his resting place was in Nutty Putty Cave. Aww. Yeah. And that is the story of John Edward Jones and the Nutty Putty Cave incident. I told you it was sad.
Yeah. And it's not even like aside from how sad it is. It's just so like uncomfortable listening to or learning about it because you just put yourself kind of in his shoes. And I was just like trying to imagine it. And one, I can't imagine it because me mm-hmm. personally, I don't go in caves. Well, I guess I've been in mines. But it's not the same.
No, it's not.
I have
the
plenty
same.
Of room and I'm walking. I'm not crawling.
Yeah.
But I can't put myself in his place. But even just from what I can relate to, like, I don't know. It's just so. Ooh.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable.
I can't imagine.
Like, that gives me anxiety just listening to it.
I'm telling you, when I first heard about this case, I listened to it on a different podcast and I was like, I was at work and I was like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Oh my
and
God.
It's just also so sad that they couldn't get his body out after the fact.
Oh, no. Yeah. His family was, like, mortified. Like, they could not believe. Like, they were just so distraught that they
well, because that's, like, a big part of closure.
Yeah. But I'm glad that they, like, have, like you said, kind of now, like, not accepted. But
found
like,
peace with.
Yeah, found peace with the fact that that's where mm-hmm. he is resting.
Yeah, like, they were able to kind of appreciate because his wife had mentioned, like, he loved the outdoors.
Yeah.
And his final resting place, like, being outdoors was kind of.
I feel so bad for his wife and his kids because yeah. his one kid never got to meet him.
Mm-hmm. And his daughter was, like, maybe one, I think. So like, she was still a baby. She like, she doesn't really have any him. Recollection of him.
What would.
That makes it, like, worse almost.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder.
He was 26.
I know. He was so young, too.
Yeah.
I just.
That's only 5 years older than you and 6 years older than us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Realistically, like 5 and a half, but.
I just wonder if they were able to get his body out, if they still would have closed the cave.
Well, they. So these concrete plugs can be opened again. they made it so that they can be opened if they want to. Mm-hmm. Like, but one, it would cost a lot of money, and two, a lot of people to get the concrete plugs open. So I'm assuming if they ever had the proper equipment, they could get his body out. But at the same time, like, you don't know, like, the state of his body. It's been over 10 years. Like,
yeah.
You don't know, like, the conditions of... Because people used to come out and, like, covered in clay from Nutty Putty Cave. Like, that's how kind of how it got its, like,
that yeah,
name.
That yeah. makes sense.
And so I'm assuming that it's not dry down there.
Yeah. But I just wonder,
oh,
like,
which would also explain why there was so much liquid in his lungs. You know what I mean? Because he was, like, breathing in.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, but he was, I know, when you're upside down, like, the blood.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, that definitely contributed to it.
Yeah, it
Whereas
wasn't.
If he was in a drier environment, he probably could have had longer, slightly.
Mm-hmm. Or possibly. Maybe the, like, the dust from the rock, though.
Oh, true.
He yeah. could be breathing that in.
I just, like... I wonder if the reason why they closed the cave was because it was dangerous or because there's now a body in there and that's a biohazard.
Probably both.
That was the first ever fatality they had in Nutty Putty Cave, but I think I'm glad that it was one person and not multiple people.
No, me too.
That
but
were
like
made them be like
I don't
okay.
know, maybe it's just like me being like everyone on this planet is terrible, but like if they were able to get his body out, I just wonder if they would have still closed the cave.
I think they would have. I think it was, like, unanimous. Like, they were unanimous in voting on
no,
closing the cave.
No, but that's what I, like, I wonder if it's because his body was still in there or if it was
yeah.
because it was dangerous.
I think I, that's my best guess I, like, would be it's probably a combination of both, but when they had the vote, if they were able to get his body out or even if they were able to rescue him and he didn't die, I think there still would have been some people who would have wanted to close a cave, but there probably would have been some people who were like, no, he's fine.
Well, there was people that during, like, kind of the 80s, 90s, and early-ish, like, earlier 2000s, because this was early 2000s, that, like, they had been, there was pretty, there people were pretty split on, like, if they wanted the cave to close.
Yeah.
But there were people that were like, we want this cave open. And then there was other cases where people got stuck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they wanted stuff close because this cave is not mapped, like,
mm-hmm. But
perfectly.
That's why I question it, because, like, people have died in caves before and they don't close the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't know, people die on amusement park rides and they still reopen. So I'm just like...
True.
I think maybe it did have to do with the lack of retrieval.
Yeah. And I don't know. His like, body. Maybe if they were able to get him out, they still would have closed it. But it's just, like, an interesting question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it would have been a combination of both. Because there would have been people who were just like, well, it's up to people to choose what they want to do. But then the fact that there's also a body in there now, and you know people were going to go in and try to find the body
exactly.
if they didn't close it.
Exactly.
You know people would do that.
Oh, yeah.
And, like,
and then they
take
would get
selfies.
Stuck. They would get stuck. People are gross. People are disgusting.
Literally, like, people who move into murderers' houses after they're arrested or killed or whatever.
Mm-hmm. They're not good people in this world. Mm-hmm. And they would do weird things like that are just disgusting.
Yeah, I'm glad they closed the cave.
So
yeah.
am I.
And me three.
I'm in a way, I'm happy that they're at peace with him resting there, but, like, he's also resting, like, in an upside-down position, head first, feet up. Like, the thought of, oh, my God, like, it stresses me out to no end, like, the way he died.
Yeah. No, it's, like,
upside down.
Has to be the worst way to die.
You have not seen a human in over 24 hours. You have not been able to properly
talk
to
anything.
Your wife, your kid, your brother.
Yeah.
Because his brother didn't go back down after he, like, you know, left and they had the professionals come in. Like,
well, because what was he going to do that the professionals couldn't?
Right, right, exactly. And there's room for one person.
And also, he didn't have to see him at his worst. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. True.
When he was barely breathing, when he was in excruciating pain, he just saw him at the beginning when he was still relatively okay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't, I don't know. As traumatizing to see, probably.
And then they just had to have Thanksgiving.
I know. See, I knew, like, it was around Thanksgiving time. I feel like it would have been better if Thanksgiving was before.
Because he went there for Thanksgiving break. Yeah. Because he was on, you know, from school. He was a med student. He was working to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's devastating. You know, it's because I had the same reaction as, like, you guys right now, where we're just kind of sitting here, like,
well, now we know that. Like,
I know, literally, it's like, now you know this information.
Yeah, and yeah, there's nothing to do with it except, like, sit on it and think about it.
Yeah, like, I had to, like, sit on it and just, like, be like, I just, you can't help him. Like, he's, you know, he's dead now, but, like, in that situation, those people did everything they could. Yeah. Everything. Like, they're heroes. Like, they did everything they could.
And, you know, they feel awful.
Oh, they like... I just can't imagine the paramedic coming back up and announcing it, and then they just have to sit there and be like, and it was over 100 people.
Yeah. Yeah. And after over a day's amount of work and nothing.
They tried everything too. Yeah. They did, I didn't mention this earlier, but they had a bunch of oil that they were like going to put down there. They had explosives to like clear up the area, but one of the explosives probably would have killed them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like we said, at that point, it's do or die.
It's do or die.
So whatever you can try, you try.
Yeah.
Whether it might kill him or not, because if you don't try anything, then
he's dying.
He had the slowest death.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like his brain was working overtime, and his heart to pump, keep pumping blood in that position. Like, you were not supposed to be in that position.
That's why I keep saying, like, that has to be the worst way to die. It just has to be.
And all you can see is, like, rock. Like, you're, you know, like, you don't see anything else.
Yeah.
And I just...
Yeah.
All because they didn't have proper equipment and decided to... They took the wrong turn. Yeah. Because on the map, like, on the birth canal, there's a narrow path that you have to go through, and then there's a big section.
Yeah, so they probably thought, hey, this is the narrow part. We're almost there.
Right, you know? thinking, then it's going to be narrow and then wide. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that they took the wrong turn. Like, John took the wrong turn 50 feet earlier, and then...
It's just done.
Yeah.
He died as soon as he made the wrong turn.
Yeah.
Like, without knowing. Yeah. And that, just the fact that I, like, that information, like, even saying that just, like, broke me. Like, I'm just like, oh, this case makes me want to, like... Just, like, scream in frustration.
Yeah.
Because nothing was going to go right. And I was just like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I know. But, yeah. That's the Nutty Putty Cave incident. And thank you guys for letting me host this episode. I hope I did an okay job.
You did.
Yeah.
Can I come back?
No.
You've been back how many times on our
episode? I want you guys to know that I have other cases that... It won't take me 7 weeks to plan.
I was exaggerating when I said 7 weeks before.
It wasn't 7 weeks.
Although we were talking about it since winter break, but you didn't start researching then, you know?
No, but I had this, like, sitting with me, and I was like, I can't be the only one that knows about this. I can't. Even though it's, like, a more well-known case.
Yeah. But I feel like people know about it, but they don't know about it. Like, they don't know the details.
Well, yeah, like, I knew of it, but I didn't know details.
Like, people know someone died in a cave.
Yeah.
But
and it's sealed now.
Much.
The details just, like... I just want to punch something. I'm so, like, frustrated.
Thank you guys for listening.
And thank you, Abby, for hosting us a case.
You're welcome.
Yeah. It was cool to be on the other side, like, just listening, but you know what I mean?
I'll be back.
We'll see
if we allow her.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us on Instagram.
@behind_thecrime and on Facebook.
Oh.
@justbehindthecrime.
And check out the name was available on Facebook.
Oh, slay.
Not on Instagram.
Oh.
Check out our website. It's linked in our Instagram description and our Facebook description.
Yeah, and one day we may potentially have a YouTube channel.
One day more. Another
destiny. What is it?
I don't know.
All I know is one day more.
That's not even the written
time.
Okay. We will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.